Talking with the military historian Adrian Gilbert, and by the volume of calls, I am confirmed that this, not just me, that finds the subject fascinating. So thank you, everybody. You are you got my back, and I've loved this all along. The subject of the French Foreign Legion, high awareness that they exist, very little knowledge of what they actually are. And we've been hearing much more about the brutality of the French Foreign Legion, how they sort of beat people into submission. I want Adrian to get back to that question, too, coming up. But we'll find out what your question is about either the French Foreign Legion or World War II history, where Adrian is an expert in his many books. Link up to him through coasttocoastam.com. And if you have StreamLink, go back and check out last night's show about hoarding, the psychological phenomenon of hoarding. And some other great calls that came in last night, too. On Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. I want to ask Adrian Gilbert a quick question before we get to the phones. Are you friends with, is it pronounced Orlando Figes?
I think it's pronounced Figes. It's
Figes.
No, I'm not. No, but I am aware of the controversy that's just recently blown up. And, yes, you know, do people write their own reviews on Amazon? I don't, and, yeah. But I've tried to steer clear of that.
This is the story that a well-respected University of London historian was writing glowing reviews of his own work through anonymous names at Amazon.com, and then also trashing his rivals. So you never got trashed for any of your military history books?
I think I've been quite lucky. I've had... I've been sort of called to task by one or two people, and I think they've made quite sound criticisms occasionally. But generally, most people are very nice about my books, and I'm very grateful for those good reviews that I get.
Good. Well, then you've gone unexamined by this guy who. Yes. Originally said he didn't do it. Then he said his wife did it.
Yes.
Then he said, "Okay, I did do it." And
he's got himself in all sorts of trouble, isn't he?
Good. It'll be interesting to see what the university does.
Yeah.
Dan is in Calgary on the international line on Coast to Coast for Adrian Gilbert, author of this new book on the French Foreign Legion. Hey, Dan.
Hello.
Hey, go ahead.
Hello, Mr. Pennant. Hello, Mr. Gilbert.
Hello there.
What you guys got? At one point, Coast to Coast was the only thing that made sense in my life. You guys have a great show.
Thank you.
About a year ago, I was in a bar and I went out for a cigarette and I started talking with a fellow from the Republic of Ireland who told me he was a former Legionnaire, had done 5 years. And he showed me his thumb. It bent all the way back basically to his wrist. And he told me all Legionnaires could do this. And this was a type of handshake that they had. Not a secret handshake, but just a way of recognizing each other in public. I was wondering if you knew anything about that. And also the assassination attempt on Charles de Gaulle, whether you know anything about that. And President Nicolas Sarkozy's father, I've heard he was a Legionnaire. Other than that, thank you very much. You guys got a great show.
Thank you, Dan.
Well, that's quite a bit for me to answer there. I must admit, I haven't heard of this Legion handshake. This is new to me. There's always things you can learn, but I suppose all organizations tend to have their special codes, which they can use to recognize each other. I suppose it's a bit like the Mason's handshake and things like that.
I'm suspicious of that one, of a thumb going all the way back to the wrist.
He might have been there.
Trick he can do that. He's gotten a good story around.
So. Yeah, sure, yes. But as for the assassination attempts on President de Gaulle, of course, is that he made himself incredibly unpopular amongst certain sections of the French military by accepting Algerian independence, and certainly for a lot of Legionnaires who had a very close attachment to Algeria. It was really their home. The organization had been based there since the 1830s, and you know, you're talking over about 130 years they'd been there until de Gaulle gave it away in the early 1960s. And so, yeah, a lot of Legionnaires were very unhappy. And in fact, there was a full-scale mutiny, which was largely led by Legion units in Algeria to try and bring down the French government of de Gaulle. it failed and was put down. But a lot of legionnaires and other Algerian colonists set up an organization called the OAS, which was a terrorist organization designed to try and bring down the French government and assassinate de Gaulle. And certainly quite a few legionnaires were implicated in various plots to oust de Gaulle. But of course, as we know from reading The Day of the Jackal by Frederick Forsyth, they came close, but they didn't actually manage to kill him. But it's quite a good example of the turbulent history of the Foreign Legion. But I should point out it was only a minority of legionnaires who mutinied and tried to assassinate the French president.
Sarkozy, President Sarkozy's dad, legionnaire? Yeah.
I don't know that. I haven't heard that. Okay. It's possible. He's Hungarian, of course. And I'd have to admit, put my hand up there and say I'm unaware that he was in the Legion. He may well have been there.
Could account for the French citizenship being Hungarian.
Yes, yes. I mean, certainly, because I guess he Sarkozy Sr. came over from Hungary after the uprising in the 1950s, 56. And then settled in France. Like, I mean, as a boy, I knew quite a few Hungarians who'd come over in the 50s after the Soviet repression of the uprising in Hungary. I'd say it's quite possible, but I would say it's another gap in my knowledge, I have to admit.
Bruce is in San Luis Obispo on Coast to Coast for Adrian Gilbert, military historian. Bruce?
Yeah, hi, Ian. Hi. Hi, Adrian.
Yeah, hello there.
My call, and I thank your screen also for getting me on tonight. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I have a question. Adrian, do you remember Frank Dukes by any chance, who was in, his story was depicted in Bloodsport? Pretty tough character, first guy to ever win the Kumite, it was American. And being an MMA enthusiast myself, I was curious if Adrian was still in touch with anybody in the Legion, that if any of these people were thinking of getting into the MMA scene, because there's a lot of money to be made in fame. Okay, thank you very much.
I'm afraid I can only answer negative to that. I'm unaware of it. Frank Dukes.
The name doesn't mean anything to you? This
I'm
is,
afraid not, no.
This is the martial arts, kind of the full body martial arts.
Ah, right.
But I didn't know, is he claiming to be French Foreign Legion is the question.
Again, there was always a slight problem with the Legion, as we've sort of been finding out, is that because you can use assumed names, it can be a bit tricky tracking people down. And the French authorities tend to be somewhat reticent in divulging details because they feel a need to protect the people in the Legion. So there often is quite a murky area of whether people have or have not been in the Legion. And of course, there are those unscrupulous authors who write books on the Legion and have either never been in or just been in for a few weeks, and they write and deserted, and they write an extraordinary account of their own doings in the Legion, and this certainly happens all the time. So you always have to look rather carefully at the claims made on behalf of the Foreign Legion.
This is what he is talking about, that it's Frank Dukes, D-U-X, he in an autobiography. He claims to have been in the French Foreign Legion.
Right.
But I don't know if it's fiction or nonfiction. I can't quite figure that out.
Yeah, I'm afraid it doesn't ring a bell with me, put it this way.
Okay, very good. They're not bragging about him, right?
Yeah.
He's not in the brochure anyway. Let's go to Steve in Tucson on Coast to Coast for Adrian Gilbert, military historian. Steve?
Hi, Ian. I really love your show. You know, Coast to Coast was always in alien territory, and you bring another a spark to the show. I mean, between the Collier brothers and the
yeah, that was quite a story. I'm glad you're enjoying it when we go this way or that way that you go with us. So very good, thank you.
I love the French Foreign Legion, and the first question I have is you to translate the French Foreign Legion's motto. It's Legio Patria Nostra.
Yeah. Yeah, our Legion is our country, or our Legion is our fatherland, or family, I think, as Kevin was saying. Sure.
Legion is my father. That explains what it's about. Now, I've always been a fan of the Legion, and I think that the major problem the Legion has is the French officer corps. They don't treat the Legionnaires the way the Legionnaires treat the Legion. And it comes down, for me, the MBN feud, where they took an indefensible position. At the end of World War II, the Japanese had held all of the south of Indochina. Little did I know when I went to Vietnam that was Indochina. But anyway, they fought the Japanese all the way back to the MBN Thieu. And General Giap, who I didn't even know existed, caused the French Foreign Legion to come up to and man all of their garrisons up to the MBN Thieu, knowing that it's totally indefensible. Anyway, between the fall of 53 and May of 54, the French Foreign Legion lost somewhere between 9 and 11,000 men. And it was under the guise of protecting the French governor. And even put the paratroopers in. And they never surrendered. They fought till they were out of ammunition. They even put the paratroopers in, bringing ammunition to them. Right. And they did fight to the end. And they received no special honors for it. And that's one of their big celebration days within the Legion. And I'd like to know, you know, how do you feel about that? Why isn't that being talked about?
Well, I mean, obviously a long and quite sort of complex series of points you've made there. The French officer corps, you're obviously charging them with not taking care of its troops, and there's some truth in that, but it should be remembered also that that the Legion is, a posting to the Legion is highly regarded by French officers, and normally the Legion's been able to pick some of its best officers from the French academies like Saint-Cyr to go to the Legion. So the leadership by sort of lieutenants, captains, majors has been of a very high standard in the Legion because of the prestige of going there. But certainly in the war in Indochina, the French higher command, you might call it the generals, certainly behaved very ineptly by falling into General Japp's trap at Dien Bien Phu, which led to one of the great French military disasters, which the Legion was heavily involved, and roughly half of the garrison were Legionnaires, and of course they were either killed or led away into captivity after the battle. But I don't think you can be too tough on the French officers. The best go to the Legion.
9 to 11,000. Does that figure sound right?
Well, I mean, certainly my figure is that 10,000 soldiers and officers of the Legion were killed in the whole of the war in Indochina, and of course that doesn't include captures. I mean, there were considerable number of troops captured at Dien Bien Phu and marched into a very harsh captivity by the Viet Cong, or Viet Minh as they were known then, and not that many got back. But certainly, yeah, there were heavy casualties, and the Legion fought with great distinction. It's probably one of its finest battles. Again, another lost battle, but one where its heroism and bravery came to the fore.
Dennis is in St. Louis, east of the Rockies, for Adrian Gilbert, military historian on Coast to Coast. Dennis?
Oh, good evening. This has been a pretty good show here. My question is about the Spanish Foreign Legion.
Right. I can't claim a great deal of expertise on the Spanish. I know of its existence and that it was set up as a sort of to mirror the Legion, but it's never really had the success of the French version.
And it disbanded, right? It doesn't even exist anymore, does it?
I think it's probably, I mean, again, I'm sorry, this is a little bit outside my area of knowledge.
if it does exist, it's certainly very it existed and certainly until, to my knowledge, until sort of the 1980s. Now, what's happened to it, I'm not sure.
Post-Franco. Dennis, you had a more info on that?
Well, the only thing I ever came across about the Spanish Fleur, at least, that it was that it served in Spanish Morocco.
Yeah. Yeah,
I was kind of curious if it still exists there, or if they ever fought the French Foreign Legion.
No, I think it's. I want to say it's disbanded. I want to say the Spanish Foreign Legion is disbanded, but I could be wrong on that. But I don't think I don't think it didn't. You know, it came around later than the French Foreign Legion, and it was out earlier. But let me get to Dan, who's in Lakewood, California, on Coast to Coast for Adrian Gilbert, military historian. Dan.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Good evening.
Yeah, Adrian, I got two quick questions. Bruce kind of answered the first one, but just to verify it, that the Foreign Legion is officered by French citizens and that the NCOs and the enlisted personnel are foreign nationals, correct?
That is right, yes. I mean, a few foreign nationals do make it over in, as junior officers, but all the senior officers are French. Yeah, and the troops and the NCOs are foreigners of one sort or another. But do bear in mind that there are quite a lot of French nationals in there. I think as one of the earlier callers made the point is that although technically you can't be a French soldier, a French person, French citizen can't join the Legion, but you can always call yourself Belgium or Luxembourg or Swiss or French Canadian, and a nod and a wink gets you in.
Now, the second question I had is, do you consider the British Gurkhas in the British Army kind of like similar to a foreign legion for the British government, like the French Legion is for the French?
Yeah, I mean, to a point, yes, but only to a point. I mean, they have rather different histories. I mean, the Gurkhas, in a sense, were what you might call mercenary soldiers raised by the British in the 19th century to help out with colonial wars, and whereas the British raised many foreign units to man its empire, and when the empire was dismantled, they went back to their parent countries, as it were. But by a strange sort of quirk of fate, some Gurkhas went to the Indian Army, but some Gurkha units were maintained by the British, and there's been a strange sort of a situation where we still use several Gurkha battalions. And obviously they're fine fighting men, and we've been very keen to use them. But how long the Gurkhas will carry on is a sort of a good point, really.
Andy is in Los Angeles on Coast to Coast for Adrian Gilbert.
Great show, Adrian, and of course, Ian. I have a question. First of all, what percentage of the recruits from foreign countries would you say have a criminal history? I knew two of them. One seemed to be very straight from Lithuania.
Right.
The other one was from Hungary. He seemed to have he was engaged in criminal activity here in L.A. And the other question is regarding Dien Bien Phu, some of those people were repatriated back to France. I'm sure there were some that were captured alive. Do you think the French government paid a ransom for those people?
And, that's a really good question.
And the other question is, gee, you know something? There undoubtedly have been American flyers that were shot down that were left behind because we didn't want to pay the price.
Right.
Did you hear any reports as to how much may have been paid by the French government?
That's a really, really good question. I was kind of curious about that, too. Did the French government actively seek the release of the French legionnaires? Knowing that they are expendable, did the foreign legionnaires get the benefit of a full press from France to get them back? We'll get the answer to that coming up in just a second. And then did they pay a ransom to get the legionnaires back? French have done that with terrorists. So did they do it back then, too? And then whatever question you have for military historian Adrian Gilbert, enjoying this conversation about the French Foreign Legion. I mentioned before there's a story out tonight from Stephen Hawking, and it goes back to the Foo Fighters question we were talking about last hour. And I'll read you about that coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponet. So we head into our last half hour with Adrian Gilbert on Coast to Coast talking about military history, in particular here the story of the French Foreign Legion, the little told true story of the French Foreign Legion. Voices of the Legion is the name of the book. You can link up to him through coasttocoastam.com. So a quick minute here, I'll tell you a story about Stephen Hawking. We're talking last hour about the Foo Fighters. And this story, coincidentally, is in the Times Online, the Times UK. And it happened to catch my eye this morning. It said that Stephen Hawking is saying that aliens are out there and the Earth better watch out. He has suggested that extraterrestrials are almost certain to exist, but that instead of seeking them out, humanity should be doing all that it can to avoid any contact. This is in regard to a new documentary. He does the math on the probability that there must be other planets out there with intelligent life on it. But in particular, he goes to the question of whether or not we should go out of our way to make contact. And he said the idea of, such as in like TV documentaries or, science fiction, the idea that we could be making contact with aquatic life forms on other planets or, finding other forms of life, say on Mars, or even if it's microbial, whatever it is, that we should avoid it. He said, Hawking says, think about this, Hawking believes contact with a species could be devastating for humanity. He says that aliens might simply raid Earth for its resources and then move on. Quote, we only have to look at ourselves to see how intelligent life might develop into something we wouldn't want to meet. I imagine they might exist in massive ships, having used up all the resources from their home planet. He concludes, if aliens ever visit us, I think the outcome would be much like when Christopher Columbus first landed in America, which didn't turn out very well for the Native Americans. Just thought I'd pass that along. Interesting that it should hit the wires tonight. And we'll get to the phones coming up next. We'll hit your question for Adrian Gilbert on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponet. First-time caller line Bob is in Tucson, Arizona on Coast to Coast for Adrian Gilbert, and then we'll get back to the questions that we hung out there about the Viet Cong. Hey, Bob.
Yes. Good evening, Ian. And Mr. Gilbert, specifically, do you address in your book the phenomenon known as the Mafia Inglaise in the French Foreign Legion?
Yep.
And do you talk a little bit about the second para, how it's predominantly English-speaking, or it's, I guess, the RMLE, as they call it?
Yep. Right. Well, to answer your question, the Mafia Inglaise, which is the English Mafia, generally it's an expression used by the French-speaking members of the Legion, and really reflects an upsurge of recruitment into the Legion from Britain in the 1980s, and many of these were ex-Falklands veterans or ex-paratroopers, Royal Marines, and they formed sort of quite a powerful a subunit, but people were very aware of them, and a lot of them went into the French parachute rep, deuxième rep, Régiment Étranger Parachutiste, and they were sort of, because they're such poor linguists, we Brits, they were always talking English, so they were sort of, they were quite obvious. But what's happened is that you get surges of manpower, and the Mafia Anglaise is rather diminishing now, and it's been replaced by large surges of recruitment from Eastern Europe and from Russia. I hope that's answered your question.
Yeah, I think the idea, the Mafia here being a reference to just the idea that they were looking after themselves.
Exactly. Yeah, every national group does that. And right. Certainly, if you're in a minority, you always end up complaining about which nationality is somewhat in the ascendancy. And certainly, recent accounts have noticed the strength of the large numbers of Russians. So the Mafia Rus now is the sort of term being used.
Going back to the Vietnam question, was it true that the French Foreign Legion would be less bartered for, being expendable?
Sure.
Did did the French government try as hard to get those soldiers back as they would have French national soldiers?
Sure. Well, one must realize that when the foreign legionnaires were captured, because they were captured alongside French national soldiers, and they were all thrown in together. So in this instance, they were combined, and the French government obviously worked hard to try and to get them all back. And certainly there were a good many thousands of French soldiers, both legionnaires and ordinary regulars, held by the Viet Minh. So 11,000 had been captured after Dien Bien Phu, so there was a sizable number. Now, they were a great bargaining chip for the for Ho Chi Minh and his Viet Minh followers, which they exploited to the full. The conditions under which they experienced were pretty awful, and quite a few died from malnutrition and attendant diseases. But I don't think the French paid a financial sum to get them back. Basically, they gave up Indochina itself, and so that was the bargaining ploy. And after their defeat at Dien Bien Phu 1954, they went to the negotiating table with Ho Chi Minh and effectively surrendered all their colonial possessions. The Viet Minh took control of the, as I'm sure all you Americans will know, the northern part of Vietnam, and Laos and Cambodia, which were the other possessions of French Indochina, were set up as independent states. So the bargaining ploy was the country itself, really, versus the prisoners.
The legacy of that is I really like Vietnamese food, which
right.
has a slight French flavor to it.
Yes.
It's, right? A little bit more delicate than Chinese food, and it's I just like the way it's spiced. Robert is in North Dakota on Coast to Coast for Adrian Gilbert, military historian. Robert?
Hi, Ian. Hi, Adrian. How are you guys doing?
Hello.
Hey, say, good show. Hey, listen, I'm driving a truck here, Ian, in Mindak here hauling coal. I want to give a shout-out to my fellow coal drivers there. Hey, I had a question about Vietnam there. Now, you ever seen that movie by Mel Gibson, We Were Soldiers?
Yeah, I'm aware of it, though.
Okay, in the very beginning of that movie, it was before the air cavalry first got started. The air cavalry got there, whatever, but... I believe it was a French division or something like that, wasn't it? Wasn't it the Foreign Legion guys that they got wiped out before the Air Cav guys?
Yeah, well, I think we're partly talking about Dien Bien Phu, which was the last great battle of the French involvement in the war, which obviously ended, as we were saying, in French defeat. But there were other occasions where the Legion was pretty much surrounded by the Viet Minh, and various units got wiped out, as you'll see if you look at my book. But this was all in the 1950s, or indeed the late 1940s, really. The fighting in the French phase of this war was around really sort of 48, 49 up to 54. And then, of course, you have a bit of a gap before the Americans came in the early 60s. So they are fairly separate sort of battles there.
If you've never read We Were Soldiers Once and Young, it's a great book. It's a really, really good book. It'll break your heart, but it's just fascinating. Great military history. Dottie is in California on Coast to Coast for Adrian Gilbert. Go ahead, Dottie.
Hi, I'm thrilled to talk with you. I was going to be mad if you didn't take a girl.
Yeah, hello there.
Anyhow, I'm absolutely thrilled, and I've gotten back into history because my son is like Ian's younger doppelganger,
yes.
And he's a big French history buff, and my two favorite books are Le Feu from World War One.
Yes.
It's called Under Fire in English. I don't know what they have it on your side of the channel. And I wondered if you read Frank Hovarth's book, and he was supposedly SS. It was I Survived or Survival.
Right, yes. I have read that book in my researches, yes. Again,
so what did you think of it?
Well, as I was saying to Ian, I'm a little bit dubious of some of these SS
right.
stories. And I really, I sort of tend to pull cold water on them.
I Survived, this is another book about a guy being former SS
yeah.
going into the French Foreign Legion and having survived the jungles.
Yes, that's right. Yes, I mean it's a book that's come under a lot of criticism from some other Legionnaires who say a lot of it's pretty fictional, and it's one of those really hard to tell books that that come out quite a lot in the French Foreign Legion publishing business, and as I say, I'm always a little bit dubious about them. Certainly, yes, there were Waffen SS men in the French Foreign Legion, as there were a lot of other German soldiers too. Who fought in Indochina, indeed in Algeria, but I just think, you know, I wouldn't like to build up too much the SS thing. That's really my feeling on it.
And yet, as you say, you know, so many foreign soldiers going into the French Foreign Legion. Yeah. It would be weird that if you had even some SS, even just a small percentage, even if it wasn't the large numbers that some of these authors indicate, went in after World War II, then they still are fighting, you know, elbow to elbow with former communist soldiers who,
yes,
who fought Russians and Poles and French.
Yeah, it's always been extraordinary like this, that former combatants suddenly then find themselves fighting side by side. I mean, this happened after the First World War when there was a big surge of Germans into the Legion, and they were fighting alongside Englishmen and Frenchmen, and yet only a year or two before they'd been at each other's throats. And so you get this again in the Second World War. It's the way the Legion works. It brings people from all over the world and binds them together. And it works amazingly well.
Dave is in Arizona on Coast to Coast for military historian Adrian Gilbert. The book tonight we're talking about is his new book about the French Foreign Legion. But, Dave, go ahead.
Hey, yes, Ian and Adrian, good morning. I have been looking for Bernard Fall's book, Hell in a Very Small Place, for about 25 years, and I'm curious if Adrian knows if that book is even still in print.
Yeah, well, it's a classic book of the war in Vietnam, the French side of things. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's in print. I mean, if you go onto one of the major, you know, websites like Amazon.com or abooks.com, they certainly would have copies. And, you know, if it's not in print, there'll certainly be loads of secondhand copies available.
Yeah, I think I saw in my research for this, I think I saw a couple of places for that, because it too describes the Indo-Chinese conflict from the French Foreign Legion perspective.
Yeah.
John is in California on Coast to Coast for Adrian Gilbert. John?
Yes. Good morning, Ian. Good morning, Adrian.
Good morning.
I read a story in the Wall Street Journal a while back that talked about the Legion, when they are in battle, sometimes they will set a very elegant table with china and crystal goblets and serve fine French wine and French food. If that's true, I was wondering if that was just for the officers or if it's
I meant to ask that, too. I'd heard that story as well as John, that there was an emphasis on that for the officer corps of fine French cuisine, even in the course of battle.
Yes, that's certainly true. But it is very much for the officers and not for for the other ranks. I mean, the French have always maintained the tradition of savoir-faire in the military, where they tend to the fine things of life, even in the middle of battle. And certainly, yes, you know, the crystal goblets and the fine wines have always been quite a big part of the French tradition in the military. But for the other ranks, things are rather tougher. And they certainly, you know, the fare is the food is generally not of the highest quality, and certainly the utensils are pretty modest. They do have some very fine feasts, I should say, at Christmas and various of the days that the Legion celebrates, where all the good food and the good cutlery comes out, but that's only on these special occasions.
Yeah, we're talking about the French Foreign Legion and how brutal the training was, and that they, you know, for those people that survived the training, that when you make it through to the other side, life is a little bit different. About the discipline, I meant to ask this earlier too. Do they really? I mean, do they still shoot deserters in the French Foreign Legion?
No, they don't. No, they just give them a pretty hard time, as I think one of our early callers was pointing out. I think technically it would be offence in wartime if a soldier was to desert his post in the face of the enemy, then you might be liable to the firing squad. But certainly, I'm unaware of any cases where this has been carried out. And particularly, obviously, the death penalty has been abolished in France for quite some time. It's very unlikely this would take place.
Yeah, that's why I asked, because although a death penalty has been abolished in France, I get the impression that a different sort of rules applies anyway to the French Foreign Legion. So I didn't know whether they'd kept it even when the country at large had it. Mark is in Florida for Adrian Gilbert on a wild card line as we're just counting down the minutes on Coast to Coast. Mark?
Yes. A few minutes ago, a question that I had concerning the SS post-World War II was pretty much answered, but I have another question since this man is a historian. The caller before was talking about the French history of Vietnam. I think he said the author was Gerhard. I don't have a computer. Is it possible to get a book like that through Borders? And my other question is this. I understand that General Giap wrote a book called Giap in the mid to late 1980s, and it was about the American involvement in Vietnam War, because I talked with a veteran who was a helicopter pilot that told me that by the late 1960s, they were ready to sue for peace, and it was only because of how it was covered by the press and the anti-movement that this is what kept them going until they had the bargain table. Because he was telling me that, you know, they figured out how these guys fought, even though they were doing it with two hands tied behind their back, with the way that, you know, because they were fighting a defensive war, which was stupid, because that's the real lesson of Vietnam and anything after it.
Okay.
But the thing is that even with two hands tied behind a back, the American guys, because with the use of the tunnel rats and snipers, they were starting to mop the floor with them. They were ready to sue for peace. And they said that Giap admitted this in his book, True or False.
Have you heard that, Adrian?
Yes. Well, so I'll answer the first point about the book. I mean, I think the author we're talking about is Bernard Fall. And his book is Hell in a Very Small Place, The Siege of Dien Bien Phu. And I'm sure, you could order it from a major bookstore, even if they don't have it in stock. But moving on to General Giap, who was the sort of presiding military genius of the Viet Minh and later the Viet Cong. I'm not aware of that particular book, but certainly... It seems to me it was true that in the Vietnam War, and we're talking about the 1960s, the American involvement, that the North really was almost broken, and the failure of the Tet Offensive in 68 virtually brought them to the negotiating table. But of course, post Tet, the disillusionment in the United States in sections of the population of the United States played into the North's hands, and they were able to last out. So yes, if the Americans had prosecuted the war a bit harder after 68, after Tet, things may have been very different, I feel.
Fair points all. Thank you so much for everybody's questions. Wish we could have gotten to them all. I'll just leave the rest to go to the book and go read The Voices of the Legion. Very interesting. I got the original galley, so it didn't even have any photos. And yet I had all these great mental images just by reading it. So thank you so much, Adrian Gilbert. Look forward to having you back again sometime. And thank you for putting up with all of our different questions.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I've enjoyed these last 3 hours. It's been very interesting.
Good. I'm glad. I would say a high caliber quality of question, don't you think? I mean, not from me, but from the callers. I'm really impressed. This is a very well-read group. and if you can't find any of those books we mentioned earlier, you can always try a used bookstore, too, and they can try and track them down for you. In the meantime, get this new book from Adrian. Link up to him at coasttocoastam.com. Enjoy a beautiful weekend ahead. Deus te ama, and I do, too.